Hello, and welcome to a new episode of the Between the Posts podcast. Today, we turn to Italy for the first time this season as we go over Sassuolo against Inter. Sassuolo, of course, Italy's surprising number two when they went into this match against Antonio Conte's Internazionale. And with me here to discuss this match, also of Between the Posts, Jose Perez. Jose, welcome.
Hello, Eric, and hello, everyone. It's nice to be talking about Serie A again. I would like to say, though, that this match did not turn out the way we expected it to, didn't it?
No, even though how it went was one of the scenarios I had in my head that it could go, but I didn't really want it to go that way. But in the end, it happened how it happened. So, yeah, let's go into lineups. Sassuolo, as I mentioned earlier, when they came into this match, they were Italy's number two. They had the most goals scored from any side in Italy so far this season. Tell us a little bit about how they lined up today, about their formation, about key players, etc., etc.
Yes, we'll do a bit of a longer introduction than usual, just in case some listeners are not that familiar with Sassuolo. I would like to say that if you want also like to know a bit more, there's a really nice video by Tifo Football on YouTube. We'll put that in the match notes so that you can watch that afterwards. Very nice 5-minute summary of how they play. So the team managed by Roberto De Serbi play some of the most attractive football in Italy. So Sassuolo are basically a high-pressing side. And when they have the ball, they try to make quick and short passing combinations, both during the build-up and in the final third. And that's essentially how they roll. The main issues that they usually have is that they do commit a bit more men in attack, and that makes them a bit vulnerable in defense. Also, not great at set pieces. So before today's game, they were the second place in Serie A, hadn't lost a single game. But there are two things that we need to mention about that. Number one, that they had some expected goal over performance. Like, there were a few forwards who were finishing quite well. Berardi, Juricic, Caputo, like, they were overperforming their expected goals, but they were particularly efficient. And perhaps most importantly, the calendar has been a bit favorable to Sassuolo in these first few games. They still had to face the strongest teams in the league. So let's just say that don't be surprised if we see a steep drop-off with Sassuolo coming soon. What do you think, Eric?
Yeah, this is always the time of the season when we analyze teams that are doing well and that we say, okay, are they for real? Are they not for real? And I just heard you mentioning their expected goals. They managed to score 20 goals so far before this match, and their expected goals was about 11, 12. So that's a huge overperformance in that part. And also, yeah, you can get lucky with schedule. So in general, if we look at what teams in Europe are real and will compete a lot higher than we would expect of them, I don't think Sassuolo is one of them, but it's still stylistically a very fun team to watch. I'll say that, but I don't expect them to actually compete for Champions League places or what have you.
Yeah, it would be surprising even if they make it to Champions League places, because they lack a bit more attacking punch just to make it there, and definitely the biggest issue is still defense. Now, going into the lineups, so Sassuolo normally play a 4-2-3-1 shape. So the goalkeeper is Andrea Consigli. The center backs, Vlad Chiriches and Gianmarco Ferraro. Again, defense is not their strongest aspect, but I mean, what happened today, we'll talk about it. As the fullbacks, we have Rogerio as the left back and Jeremy Toldian. If you are a Bundesliga fan, you might remember this name, as the right back. The double pivot was Manuel Locatelli, the brains of this Sassuolo operation on the pitch, and Maxime Lopez, a guy who, if you follow a bit of French football, you might remember him as a winger in Marseille. And as Eric mentioned to me before the podcast, oh, now you see him in a double pivot alongside Locatelli.
Yeah, that's also one of the things that make Roberto De Zerbi, the Sassuolo manager, fun, you know, that he takes this kind of profile and he thinks, okay, I'm going to make this into a defensive midfielder, even though that guy is like 1.60 meters tall, you know? So that's fun. And fair play, it has been working so far, so why not?
Yes. Then we have on the wings, so this is usually their starters, Jeremy Boga on the left and Domenico Berardi on the right. usually they try to stay wide, so they give a bit more space in the center too. Filip Dudicic, the very skilled number 10. And normally you would have veteran Francesco Caputo in that position. He's their main goal scorer. But, and this is their big absence today, Caputo was not there. So he was replaced by the substitute Giacomo Raspadori. And again, that's an absence that conditions them a lot because it does, you could see that today they were lacking a bit of punch in the final third.
Yeah, and I'm not sure if you did as well, but De Zerbi, of course, a manager that for some time has been coming now. Did you notice that when we look a lot on Twitter, for example, people were analyzing his Foggia team as back in 2015, as early as then. People were watching that team, and now he's made it to Serie A, so that's fun.
Yes, and I think, and after that, I think he was coaching, was it Benevento?
Yeah.
Which was a team that was, they tried to do their thing, but they lacked so much talent that they usually got a lot of goals scored against them.
Yeah, but in the end, it's good marketing and branding for a manager to have such a specific style, right? Because Benevento were relegated, but he's now coaching in the Serie A, even though Benevento is back again. But you understand what I mean.
Absolutely. And again, it's just good that Serie A has teams like Sassuolo or Atalanta that are bringing this kind of more attractive football into the league, to the point that honestly, I think right now Serie A, this actually came up in an interview with Unai Emery, like right now Serie A is scoring more goals than La Liga. Right now La Liga is probably more defensive than Serie A.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot to say about Italy, the true home of defending, that might not be the case anymore. But if we go over to Inter, they've had a relatively bad start to the season. First of all, they were hit by a wave of corona cases, which has made it hard for them to play with their strongest team. Brozovic, who is their best holding midfielder, and I think a very underrated deep playmaker, was not available for this match. And I asked our writer, Thanos, who is an Inter fan, watches every game, obviously has a good understanding of the game from a tactical point of view, because else I would not have asked him to write for our website. He said there are a couple of issues, but most notably in counter-pressing effectively, so which is often something that the teams of Conte do very well, counter-pressing. He said they are not doing that so well. And he also said they run out of steam after about an hour, and that makes everything even worse, not only the counter-pressing, but also the attacking. Nainggolan is still injured. He said that also Inter were struggling when they played a 3-4-1-2 formation instead of a 3-5-2 formation, and that hasn't helped them at all. For this match, as I said earlier, there was the 3-5-2 shape. Lukaku and Hakimi were both rested ahead of very important Champions League games against Gladbach. Of course, Handanovic still plays as the goalkeeper. At the back, you had a centre-back trio of Bastoni, Stefan de Vrij and Skriniar, which, to my understanding, was a very good trio today, especially Bastoni did a very good job. Also, Skriniar was very solid. Wingbacks, quite surprising, Matteo Darmian. So starting ahead of Hakimi on the right, and on the left, not really a defender, but he played on the left wingback, Ivan Perisic, who was, of course, more of a winger. Then in midfield, a complementary trio of Nico Barella in the holding position, and Vidal and Gagliardini in the box-to-box roles. So, as we said earlier, no number 10 anymore. Not a natural role for Christian Eriksen to play in. So that's why he's on the bench as well for a lot of Inter's matches. And up front, as I mentioned earlier, not Lukaku, but Alexis Sanchez and Lautaro Martinez, one of Europe's best young strikers. So if we look at this game, Jose, we know Sassuolo at home or away does matter. They will play their own game. You said it earlier, short passing, counter-pressing, the modern type of game we see from them. What did Inter do against that, and what kind of first half did we see as a result?
So let's just start by praising what was a really nice defensive performance by Inter. And I think I should start talking about just how well coordinated and executed the pressing was. So let's go a bit into the details. We had in this case the two strikers from Inter pressing, the two center backs and the keeper. We had interesting behavior from the central midfielders. This is a theme that we will repeat from last week, which is in the 5-3-2, the central midfielders make or break the defensive system. And in this case, what was usually happening is that both central midfielders, both of the interior midfielders, the number eights, Vidal and Gagliardini, were moving wide, were making very wide movements, both in attack and in defense. So usually both Gagliardini and Vidal would go out wide to press the Sassuolo fullbacks, and they were trying to cut off the passing lanes from the fullbacks inside, either to the wingers or to the double pivot midfielders. And then usually behind their backs was Barella, who was more focused on nullifying Locatelli. Then in the case of Inter, if by any chance Sassuolo's wingers try to drop deeper and try to help their teammates out of the pressure, the wingbacks would follow. A very nice detail that I noticed too is that Sassuolo likes to invite the opposition press. They want to pass the ball back a bit all the way to the keeper, trying to get those defenders to go forward and open up spaces. Inter did not bite, and that was very good because they did not leave space for Sassuolo to play through the center.
Yeah, and I think in general, if we look at it extremely simple, I think what Conte said before the match was, listen, you know, it's Sassuolo. It's one of those managers who wants to play from the back. Just sit back in your 5-3-2, do the pressing, as you said earlier, how they did it. Do that pressing, but don't overcommit. Just stay back, and yeah, Sassuolo will start to make mistakes. I'm quite sure that's more or less what Antonio Conte said before the match to his team. And what did we see, Jose, in the first 15 minutes?
Sassuolo made mistakes. That's what happened. And we can go and review what happened in the third minute when, well, Inter and their pressing led to a turnover. So Chiriches gets a turnover when pressed by Lautaro. Then we get the succession of bloopers from Consigli and Chiriches, who, well, then leave Lautaro in a very simple situation of just pass to Alexis, Alexis scores. And yeah, that's the kind of goal that will demotivate your team a lot, isn't it?
Yeah, but also, like, I'm laughing at it as well because it looked stupid. But of course, those guys are a lot better than we were as football players, but still, it really looked clumsy. And Chiriches, I don't know even if that's the way how to pronounce it, but Chiriches made the first error. And then later on, he was dispossessed so easily. So all in all, not a very good look for him. But yeah, that was in the third minute. And after that, Inter basically did the same what they would go on to do for the entire match, which is sit back.
Yes. Yeah, from there, already the game state, basically, Inter get the perfect game for them because at that point, yes, they can just sit back and try to pick off Sassuolo on the counter. At that point, they didn't. And especially if we consider that right now, Inter were trying to play, they were trying to conserve energy because they have a very important game in the middle of the week.
Yeah, and I'm not sure if they would not have done that, if the very important game would not have been on the schedule, but still, it was a very effective way of containing Sassuolo. And what I also thought, Jose, was Sassuolo's rotations and way to get open and trying to get the ball upfield. To me, it felt very predictable and not really original, let me say that.
Yes, this was a situation. Again, all of this reminds me a lot of last week's Atletico versus Barcelona in the sense that Sassuolo usually played where Inter wanted them to. Like, Inter were very good at preventing Sassuolo from playing through the middle. And you could see that they were searching. You could see that the Sassuolo players were, like, shifting the ball around, going through, like, what they were taught and trying to find that opening through the middle that never came. So eventually, after trying, then, okay, we try to go on the wings. Inter allows them to a certain degree to move forward on the wings. But then if Sassuolo ever got to the final third, they could never do that. They could never move from the wings into the box. That's the thing that they always struggled with throughout the entire game.
Yeah, and I thought especially the side defenders, so Bastoni and Skriniar, did a really good job in containing that danger. And yeah, I think you described correctly why there was no danger at all from Sassuolo. To be complete, after 15 minutes, Inter get a corner, set piece, and that leads to an own goal from the unlucky guy of the game, Vlad Chiriches, I think a Romanian centre-back. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it was clumsy again from him, an own goal like that.
Not just from him, like what the other thing that I noticed is that I'm usually the kind of person who has this kind of rule of thumb of like set pieces like that. If they bounce in the box, if you as a defense let them bounce in the box, if you let them bounce like that without clearing them, something went wrong.
Yeah, that's a good rule of thumb to follow. And frankly, after 15 minutes, Inter were 2 goals up and they had even less incentives to seek attacks. And I think Sassuolo, as the half progressed, they went for a more aggressive approach. They went for a slightly more attacking approach, but they were very unable to get the ball in the dangerous areas, as you said earlier. I was especially disappointed with 2 players, Berardi on the right, who's basically, I think, their best player from a purely ability point of view. I didn't think he created a lot today. And also Locatelli, he was very uninfluential because as the single pivot in possession, he has a very important role to play and he didn't play it at all today.
Yeah, so in terms of movement without the ball, I like Berardi because I think he is the only one who kind of went off the script in terms of movement. I felt that Sassuolo were a bit static in their combinations and that the attackers weren't moving. When you have a defense as stiff as Inter's, you have to do a bit more like rotations and switching positions and that kind of thing. And Berardi was the only one doing that. So even if maybe his dribbling or shooting game was not on his best day, I think he was doing at least the right movements. Because other than him, the rest of the attackers were a bit predictable.
Yeah, anyways, Sassuolo were not able to create a whole lot. And in the 40th minute, 5 minutes before the break, the unluckiest man of the game, Ciricic, gets injured. So that's really a bad day for him.
Absolutely. And I know a few people who probably for their fantasy league or Fantacalcio for the Italians, they end up putting that guy in their fantasy lineups. That's going to lead to a bit of cursing around. But yes, so generally, after the 2 goals, not much happened during the first half, if we are honest, because Inter also didn't have too much incentive to attack too aggressively. Like, there were a couple situations where they tried to pick off Sassuolo on the counter, but again, they weren't too aggressive about it, and they didn't have to. I mean, they already had the advantage. So Inter mostly focused on the defending. Again, when defending in their own half, again, kudos to the central midfielders who did a good job supporting their wingbacks and prevented Sassuolo from like making really dangerous combinations. And by the way, there were segments in which even Lautaro and Alexis were tracking back to defend, which is nice.
Yeah, it was at times more of a 5-3-1-1 defensive shape. Also, what I really liked from Inter was what they did the moment the ball was won. Like, they had so much directness. The first thing they would look for is the ball over the top behind Sassuolo's defense, most often to Lautaro and sometimes to Alexis. It was very simple, very effective, well done.
Yep, and that gets the job done for Inter during the first half. So what do we think about the second half?
Second half was like watching 45 minutes of the same patterns, the same things, but minus the good Inter counterattacking and minus creative stuff at all. Like, if I'm honest with you, we picked this match for this podcast. There was a lot of potential in it, but this was the worst scenario for a fun game to analyze because the passive team in Inter got a very early lead and a very early 2-goal lead and had no incentive whatsoever to be more expansive, to be more offensive. So if you look at purely from a tactical point of view, this was one of the worst picks we've made so far in this past 11 months since we started podcasting, I think.
By the way, it's not like we're not complaining about the teams or anything. This is quite literally luck of the draw and football as usual just being random. Like, as if Sassuolo had scored one of these, then we would have had a very different game. I mean, the main issue that we had is that we had, after the first Inter goal in the third minute, the game state never changed. It was always Inter sitting back and waiting to pick off Sassuolo on the counter. And that was almost 90 minutes of what we watched because Sassuolo could never break the deadlock. So if we had a Sassuolo goal, the game state would have changed, but it never did. So we got 90 minutes of the same thing, which makes for kind of boring tactical analysis. We have to be honest.
Yeah. Can we talk a little bit about managers not having a plan B? Like we said it about Ronald Koeman last week or 2 weeks ago. We say it a lot of times now. Should managers have more of a plan B, like a not only a formation change, but maybe going more direct, going more towards the wings? For example, today, as you said earlier, fully correct, Sassuolo could not get through on the wings. Why don't you try a more central approach, for example? Why don't you try to change a few aspects of your offensive game? But they didn't do that.
Yeah, and sometimes you wish, oh, I wish they used long balls more often. But also, Sassuolo are actually, I think, I don't remember where I was reading that stat, but they have one of the worst rates of like winning aerial duels in the league. And they're not exactly good at winning second ball. So it's also something that it's not, the lineup is not, was not optimized for any long ball play. So, and honestly, we can say this both for the Serbi Sassuolo and for Conte's Inter, that neither team really has much of a plan B in case the plan A doesn't work.
Yeah, true. And for the sake of completeness, I'll say that in the 60th minute, so 6-0 minute, Gagliardini scored a very good goal. That was one of the few highlights of the second match, actually. First touch with his left and then shot it with his right, well in the corner. And that was one of the few highlights, as I mentioned earlier, of the second half. We saw some substitutions from Sassuolo, but not really something that I would like to elaborate on. Would you?
Not much, but I would like to elaborate on Gagliardini's game because in the end, I thought that Inter's defensive performance was the highlight of their game more than the offensive one. And I think Gagliardini got to win many duels throughout the game. He was very effective at the pressing, again, just shutting down the passing lanes for the Sassuolo fullback on his side. He made several when Inter had the ball, he was making really good and really dangerous runs behind Sassuolo's midfield. One of those runs ended up turning into the goal. So all in all, a very complete performance from Gagliardini. We don't get to say that often from his case. So, but at least from midfielders, he was the Inter player that impressed me the most. And it was nice to see him get a goal because, yes, it caps off what was a pretty good performance from him.
Yeah, one point for me is that Sassuolo brought on Hamed Junior Traore in the 76th minute. That's a player I really like. A good physical profile, understands when to go deep, when to try to go for the space, has a good dribble, but he couldn't do anything today. But that's one of the players to look out for at Sassuolo.
Yes, and again, like there were several substitutions for Sassuolo, but ultimately it was kind of man for man. Like all of the substitutions were pretty much man for man. And there was no, even though there were changes, there were no big tactical changes. Sassuolo was basically playing the same way they were playing before. So, and those changes came right when the 3-0 happened. And yeah, the game just died there. Yeah. Like not much else was going to happen. So this is a game that got shut down a bit early. So I guess it's time to start talking a bit about the takeaways for both teams. So what do you think will be the situation with Sassuolo?
I think your analysis before we went into the game, like, when we talked about the lineups, your analysis was spot on. Like, there's a couple of things that are facts that we can assume that they won't compete for European places. I do think, aside from overperforming their expected goals and what have you, they lack quality at the back. I like the line of three. I think they have a good striker in Caputo when he stays healthy. That double pivot is a bit risky, but it can work in this style. But I think their defenders are just lacking too much quality. And I think overall, this style of play, like, give it one more season. Like, De Zerbi has been there for, I think this is his third season now, if I'm correct.
Like, I think so.
Yeah, yes. Give it some time. Like, we are all admiring Gasperini and Atalanta now, but that was also 3 or 4 years in the making. Eh? That's not something that happened from one season to the other. So give it some time. But I don't think they'll be like a top five contender this season already.
No. And as we said, like, combining the expected goal over performance with the calendar, I think we're going to see kind of a sharp drop off in their position sooner rather than later.
Serie A is weird, man, because I think Serie A has the potential to be the most unpredictable league of the top five leagues this season. I think Germany is a lot closer than people think. Bayern is winning everything, but they're not as good as last year. Dortmund could creep up to them. I think France is pretty much done and dusted. That's Paris Saint-Germain. I think Spain is unpredictable. I think England is just Liverpool. But I think here in Italy, we can see some totally crazy stuff because Juve obviously have the biggest budget, but they have not been able to put in good performances just yet. They have a manager who's a novice. He just started. Crazy move, if you ask me, but okay. Then you have Milan, who are doing a really, if we're honest, kind of modern style of play, which is nice. And a lot of goals. And they have Zlatan, of course. Inter, after this win, are now second. I think Roma, who have a rejuvenated Mkhitaryan, you should not look past them. They have 13 points from the last five games. And I think Italy could get funny because we have a model on our website, betweenthepost.net. You should check it out. It only gives Juve a very slim chance to win this year's Serie A title. Now, I know it's a model. It's not reality. And every model has assumptions in it. But I do think there's some truth to that. And if you look at things like expected goals and the amount of chances they are conceding at the moment, I think Juve is a lot weaker than people think, even though they have their own Zlatan in Cristiano Ronaldo. So, yeah, lots to talk about there. I didn't even mention Atalanta, Napoli, Lazio, but I think they generally might have a title race that goes on for a long time between two or three teams.
Yes, and then we have the case of Inter that it did not start out that well with the season, but hey, this game could be like a good moment for them to use this as a platform to lift off and hopefully try to keep on with their title challenge. And it is true, Serie A will get, for now, looks like it will be the most competitive and the most fun of the leagues when it comes to the title race.
And the fun thing is, like, Inter have 18 points from 9 games and they're second. So that just goes to show you that the champion in this league will not have very high point total. I don't believe in that.
Yes. So hopefully it took us a while to get to Serie A, but we hope that we'll be able to revisit it soon. It'll be fun to see what happens.
Yeah, I agree. This is not in the script, Jose, but you're a bit older than me. Like, I'm from 94. You are from
90.
Do you have any memory of Maradona or not?
That's the thing. I don't have any memory of like watching Maradona play, which is why I personally, like, it didn't have as much impact on me. But I mean, we're all football journalists, analysts, writers. You see the rest of the community and how much of an impact that has on everyone else. And of course, we all feel something and we all feel that it's weird. Like, it's just unexpected.
Yeah, I had to think back onto when Johan Cruyff died 4 years ago. Like, the initial reaction is not that far off here in the Netherlands compared to when Cruyff died and when Maradona. A lot of people here, especially people in their 40s, in their 50s, they are obsessed with Maradona. And it's a bit sad always that only when someone dies, when a big icon like that, a legend like that, when they die, only then do you fully realize how much they have meant to all the football fans in the world, you know? So, yeah.
If I could add something there, is that especially now in this era where we're always communicated, where we know week by week, day by day, what is happening in the biggest teams in the world, sometimes we lose track of, like, it feels like every week we put a player on a pedestal. And the next week, that same player, he's the worst player in the world. And a lot of these guys are top players with, and if you zoom out, you like, it looked a lot, if you follow the news cycle, like they were being inconsistent. But no, there are so many top players here that are super consistent that the news cycle, we exaggerate everything to make it look like they're not. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but I think in Maradona's time, you know, now we can watch Italian football every week. I don't think people from the Netherlands watched Italian football every week when Maradona played, you know, and I think the tournaments were a lot bigger at the time. I mean, they are huge now, but I think that was maybe the only time where you could see Maradona 3 or 4 times in a month. And I think that's what made him very big as well, like how impactful he was at that stage.
And that's kind of what I was getting to at this point, which is that with this culture of like 24/7 news cycle, we've kind of lost like that mystique that these players had. I can guarantee you that if Maradona had played in this time, he might have not been held in that height of a regard if he hadn't been, like, if he had been inconsistent. Because at this point, with this news cycle, we expect players to produce all the time, every week, which is insane. We are expecting machines there, not humans.
Yeah, but look what we are doing now. We are recording a podcast Saturday evening. Game has been playing Saturday afternoon. You know, like, we are a part of that as well now.
That's actually a very deep reflection. Damn it. Yes.
Yeah, I was surprised by the reaction here in the Netherlands. Like, that guy is something else. So we'll go out of the podcast now. Normally I go out very lightly, but this is not a subject to go out very lightly. But I would still like to thank everybody for listening. Visit our website, betweentheposts.net. Watch the predictions page because it has some fun things about the Serie A. And Jose, I think we should be glad that we not always pick the Premier League match. For example, this weekend, the Premier League match Tottenham against Chelsea would have been obvious, but we have to do games like this as well. And we were a bit unlucky today with the selection, that's all.
But we'll keep doing Serie A in the future, that's for sure. Because again, this was just luck of the draw. Next time, hopefully, we'll get a game that doesn't end in 15 minutes.
Sure. Thanks for listening, and we will be back next week. Thanks so much.
Thanks everyone for listening. See you around.